Ray Lynch's Cloud Below Your Knee signals 8 p.m. Wednesday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, along with the team saturated with talent, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, and Tatiana Gago, operating as our media relations rep and orchestrating our band of story lovers by serving as our engineer. Together, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls before returning us safely to the present. You know, a while back, I facilitated a storytelling workshop for teachers and kids, and my goal was discussing the meaning found in stories. When a little kid, Davey, was picking on me, he said, "Mister, why are you here? I want to go home. Leave me alone." He was a real pain, to tell you the truth. And then he blurted out a joke. He said, "Hey, mister, what's faster, heat or cold?" I said, "Davey, I don't know." And he said, "Heat, because you can catch a cold." And I said, "Well, Davey, I got a joke for you. What did the apple tree say to the farmer? Stop picking on me." Well, he got the idea, and he also got the idea that we actually learn a lot from stories, too. You know, just as the tortoise and the hare teaches that slow and steady wins the race, characters in our personal stories function as portraits of wisdom and inspiration. And tonight, my guest tellers are successful entrepreneurs whose stories center on wisdom and inspiration, with special leverage given to the latter. Greg Donnelly is founder of Jack Donnelly and is a great sport having come here from Austin just to do this program, and I'm so grateful to him, as well as longtime friend Harwood Taylor, who's director of Gramillion and Company Fine Arts in Rice Village and who has graced this studio with stories since 2009. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
So glad
to be here.
Very well.
Love that you guys are here. And in Harwood's own intellectualized, beautiful way, the two of you are going to juxtapose each other.
Okay.
The stories tonight are
going
to do just that. Greg, you know, you've been a victim of my comprehensive emails, as we talked about earlier, for a few years, and you're still here. And thank God.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to finally meet you in person. Jack Donnelly took a short hiatus, and now you're back on track. You were in Atlanta, and now you're in Austin. How's the move been for you?
Austin has been great. Austin is a great city. It's full of community. It's full of creativity. There's an entrepreneurial spirit that I really enjoy, and you know, I look forward to tapping into that more as we grow as a business.
Yeah, Austin is where the cool people live. There's no question about it. Your products are made in America, and that's pretty significant. When I was a kid, almost everything was made in America, and I know it's a hard question, but give us a sense of how rare it is to find garments that are made in the USA.
It's at the moment it's getting better, which is very encouraging. As you mentioned, 20, 30 years ago, it was everywhere, and a lot obviously has gone overseas. And you know, that's too bad to see, because there's a rich history, a rich tradition in American craftsmanship. I'm encouraged because there's a lot of other great makers like myself and other brands that are kind of carrying the torch. And I think as we continue to grow and become more well known, that you know, hopefully people will kind of fall in line, and we'll see a resurgence in that.
I hope so. I really do. And Harwood, you know, you had an impressive opening for Houston artist Fernando Casas. How do you gauge the success of an opening of an artist? I was there. That was really wonderful.
Well, obviously, we had two buildings open, and I went to both buildings during the course of the evening, and they were both full rooms, so I know we must have had 300 people there.
Yeah.
Fernando has a huge intellectual following. He's been a teacher for decades at Rice, so that's one way. And then, of course, sales help, and
right.
We have had some sales, so very grateful to have what I believe to be a historic exhibition, and I encourage you to all come see it. You will not be disappointed. It is
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Both Austin and Houston, and this is not an idle statement, are both pretty magnificent cities. They are artistically spectacular. Indeed. I mean, really, and that's not a word I use often, but they are spectacular. There's something happening in both cities that speak volumes to the artistic community in every conceivable way. My wife's a musician. She's a flutist for the Houston Ballet Orchestra, and it never ceases to amaze her how we compete with cities like New York and Chicago. It's amazing. It is. You know, you are celebrating 31 years, Gramellion. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How do you celebrate, or I should say, what do you attribute your great longevity? I know how you celebrate, but
honest answer is I was probably one of the most unhealthy people in my 20s and 30s, and I told Ron Grimion many years ago, I'm like, if you'd have been a healthier person, you'd have fired me. I would have fired me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just grateful he was patient and I matured. Yeah. did a lot of therapy. Well, I guess what we're going to talk about this a little bit in my story, but I love people, and basically my job is to find new people to expose them to art.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
So it's not a job for me. It's what you said about community, Greg, warms my heart, and that's what I
right.
believe we do is create community.
Right. It really is. And you know, each of you were inspired. This is why I'm excited about your stories. Each of you were inspired by a family member to do what you're doing for a living, and Greg by your grandfather, and Harwood by your mother in particular. And both of you gentlemen are not only successful, but you possess the kind of integrity that most, I think, can only envy. It's a characteristic that's instilled by your grandfather and mother, respectively. Greg, let's start with you. You grew up in Atlanta, and you earned a degree in finance from TCU in 2006. After graduation, you moved to Connecticut to work for Vineyard Vines. Are those guys little whales on their
yeah,
things,
that,
for God's sakes?
Yeah.
How can you wear that? They have
that
little whales on.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Please.
That is correct.
It's pink and you wear a whale. Okay. But I deviate. Okay. Then to Dallas to work in finance. You decided to launch Jack Donnelly and set sail in your parents' basement to save cash. You moved to Austin 3 years ago. You left the basement back in Atlanta. Let's get to your first story. Jack Donnelly was your grandfather. He passed away before you were born, yet he was so influential. In fact, you told me that never meeting him actually drove you to succeed even more. Tell us a story to showcase your grandfather, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Hank, when you first approached me to do this, I took some time to kind of reflect on my journey and how I got here. And, of course, you know, the business is named after my grandfather, Jack. And so I thought, you know, what he meant to me, what his life meant to me, and what I learned through, you know, what was passed down through my father. So my dad is a big part of this story as well, because they're almost one and the same, obviously, because I didn't get to meet my grandfather. And so there were three characteristics that really stood out to me, and they kind of represented it. Three phases of my journey, and one is how I got on this path, and the second is, you know, where we are now, and kind of I want to expand on where we're going in the future. So the first one when I was a little kid, my dad always told me a saying that my grandfather Jack always said, and he said it was merchandise well displayed is merchandise well sold. And I'm in apparel, so obviously that could be taken literal, and yeah, that's great advice, but my grandfather Jack, he meant it more metaphorically, of he took a great deal of pride in his appearance, in what he wore. He's from upstate New York, and he's a working class gentleman, and worked at the railroad for 50 years, and he didn't have a lot of money, but his wardrobe was always impeccable. And he thought that was important, that anytime you leave your house and you're going to go meet someone, or you want to look good, you want to represent yourself well. And, you know, my dad always said he would, you know, Jack, his father, would be at church with a fresh pressed suit and, you know, tucked in and just looking really sharp. And that stuck with me, because it instilled almost a sense of style in me, and that I said, hey, I want to look cool. And, you know, I dig style. And so I think that might have been the first moment where I said, maybe, you know, this is maybe a part of my life. And so I'll never forget that. And the second part of kind of where we're at now, how I got from launching the business to where we are now, and this is more representative in my dad, and that's hard work. And It has played a big part of my life. If you look at where my dad came from and to where he got, I mean, it's truly remarkable. You know, he didn't have a lot of opportunities where he was growing up. Again, he was working class, small town, upstate New York. And, you know, he just through pure grit and determination and hard work, he kind of made it to where he was. And I had a front row seat to that. So you couldn't not, you know, have that rub off on you. And I think it's been so important on my journey because, you know, my dad was an underdog, and I kind of take on that mentality in the sense that, you know, I started this business with no money. You know, I started this business by myself. You know, I didn't have a background in design or anything. So the deck was kind of stacked against us. But, you know, my dad always said that, you know, if you want to achieve something great, that, you know, hard work is the path. You know, that's something I can control. There's a lot of things you can't, but knowing that has propelled me to this point and will continue to lead the way as I move forward. And the last one is kind of how I see it transcend into the business. And it's probably the most important to me is loyalty. And, my dad always preached about how his father taught him how important loyalty was. And, you know, whether, you know, loyal to your beliefs, loyal to your faith, loyal to your family, friends. And, you know, he worked at the railroad for 50 years. And then my dad, as he was coming up, you know, he said there were some pivotal moments in his life, along his career that, you know, kind of propelled him to where he is. And he said, you know, you almost have to be loyal to opportunities. And I looked at it and said, hey, I've got this opportunity. I need to give it my all and really maximize this journey. And the way I apply that to the business is, you know, I want to be loyal to our customers. I think that's really where it is. And, you know, we were founded on certain principles, you know, quality, consistency, service, American made. And so when we're telling that story to our customers, and if they identify with that, and they purchase a pair of our pants, I want them to know and have confidence that, you know, as long as we're in business, we will stand by what we believe, because I'm a consumer myself, and I've adopted brands or heard stories of things I liked, and I wanted to be a part of that. And then to find out years later, as they grow and look more into money and profit, and you know, they abandon everything they were founded on, and I never could wrap my head around it. And I always thought that, you know, I would vow to never, as long as I'm running Jack Donnelly or as long as I'm alive, like what we represent is always going to be there. And, you know, I'm just grateful for, you know, my dad and my grandfather Jack's, you know, mentorship and guidance. And it's played a big part of my life. And, you know, I hope to carry that on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Greg, your father is obviously a huge part of the story. Why do you think it was so essential for your dad to tell you about your grandfather? I mean, obviously he did. And he wanted to, but what was he trying to say to you?
I think it came from the sense that, you know, he realized all the great things that his dad taught him that served him so well in his life. And I think he wanted to pass that on to me. I mean, he's most of everything he's done for me and done for my brother. And so I think he realized what those teachings, how valuable they were, and that they would serve me very well in my journey.
So just little bit of extemporaneousness here. Imagine a picture of your grandfather in your mind right now and describe him to us.
Yeah, I see it as he's going to work again at the railroad, and he's got some nice pressed khakis on.
Well, what did he do at the railroad?
He was a conductor for a bit, and then he was just a middle management representative. And so, yeah, then I think he had a fresh starch shirt tucked in and just looked really sharp and just went about his business and was happy in
every
that.
Day.
Yeah, every yeah. day for 50 years.
Yeah. A lot of pride. A little bit later on, I'm going to see if I can dip in a story about my grandfather, who Harwood's heard the story about the fact that he put paint on pallets, literally, in a warehouse for years. He was a Holocaust survivor. That's the job he could find when he came to this country. And I could never understand why he took so much pride putting paint on a pallet. said, Grandpa, you're just putting paint on a pallet and then onto a truck. Why do you care so much? And his answer was, because it's my job. That was his answer.
Absolutely.
And it's just, you know, that theme is just so embedded in my mind and ingrained in my heart. Harwood, you know, you've told poignant stories about family. What runs through your mind when you listen to Greg's story?
Well, I mean, obviously his love for his dad and his grandfather warms my heart. I mean, it's coming out of your pores. But you also said something that struck me, and that was loyalty to opportunity. And
that's a great line that really struck me.
Yeah, and it's that I've been given an opportunity, and Ron Grimion once told me that, you know, if you have a talent, then, you know, if there is such a sin, and I'm not sure that he believes in that or not, right, it would be not using it.
Yeah, your mother Audrey was a gallery owner, but it wasn't the business that you emulated; rather, it was the joy of living that she found so intoxicating. And it was a trip taken with your mother to Paris, Harwood, when you were 16, that really sealed your love for art.
Yes.
Tell us about that trip.
This is going to be a little bit of a meandering thing. So,
You're taking us on a road, so yeah, right, we're expecting it.
All right. Will you stop me when I get close to 6.5? I was going to time this. So
you bet.
So my mom was a gallery owner. She basically was an artist, and she couldn't sell her work at other galleries, and so she opened her own gallery to sell her work. When my mom's mom died, who she had had living with us, and she had bought her a house earlier in her life, she had spent down most of her money and which was actually my mom's money. She left me $5,000. My mom said, hey, grandmother, you know, left you, a granny was her name, left you $5,000 for an education. And I said, Mom, that's your money. I mean, it just immediately, that's just what came out of me. And she goes, well, it's really sweet for you to say that, but granny wanted this to go to your education, your college fund. And I said, I'm not good at school. And I wasn't. I was 16 and I liked girls and football and basketball. And she said, well, let me tell you what I'm thinking about. What about if I take you to France? I feel like you'd get an education. I'm like, I am all about that, you know? And so my mom took me on this amazing trip. You know, I'd never been on a 747. We got in a 747. Phil Collins, Air Tonight was playing on these headphones as we were taking off. And I just thought, wow, this is unbelievable. We stayed in a 13th century mansion. These people were not wealthy people, but their great, 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 whatever were, and they had divided this house in half. It was dilapidated, but it was absolutely beautiful, and it shared a garden with a cathedral. There was a little cottage house that had rose vines growing up over it, and it had long since not been used as a house. It was just basically a support for this enormous structure of roses. I've never seen the like since. And I walked out, and I just was struck, you know, by this smell of roses. Every night we had wine. I didn't drink that much. I mean, I was 16 years old. But in France, there was no legal drinking age. It was just, you know, everybody drank. And there was a cobblestoned, where they keep wine, the wine cellar, you know, that cobblestone ceilings and walls. And then there were dusty bottles, none of which had labels. They were all his friends that owned vineyards, and he would buy a barrel, and then he would pour it into bottles himself. He'd put a cork in it, a little wax, and then stick it on the shelf. And he knew, like, this one was 20 years old, this one was 10 years old. There couldn't have been a more romantic and more French host. He was a poet. His wife was from Istanbul, and she was a rug dealer. So they had this little place, and then they had this place in Paris. And my mom was very protective. I had a brother that was killed in a car accident when I was young. And, I mean, she kept me on a tight leash. I mean, when I was, you know, 10 minutes late coming home, she would, you know, there was hell to pay. But when we got to Paris, she trusted Paris, and she had always loved Paris. She had painted Paris, and she trusted me there. I was a free-range chicken. I would get on the subway. I'd never been on a subway before, and I'd ride it clear across town and get out and just see what was there. The other thing I noticed with my mom is no matter where we went, whether it was a subway or we were getting lost on the street or a cafe or a pizza place. We also were in the south of France in Cannes where the film festivals were, and I got to see all the boats and everything because the film festival had just finished. People loved my mom, but she loved France and she loved people. And I mean, I just thought about this tonight before coming here today. The reason they loved her is because she loved him first. And I'm not saying I'm this great guy, but I do love people. And I'm just genuinely curious about people. My dad was a reporter and a storyteller, and he interviewed people all the time, and I've read his letters. And I just, I have a genuine curiosity about people. And my mom also used to collect piano players. So I'm just going to give you a picture of our small gallery. It was one upstairs duplex apartment. One room was her, where she painted, and then there were two rooms that were acted as the gallery. And she would have pianos playing, and basically they were all her friends. And I think she was not a classically trained artist, so she was not a great painter, but she had been given 3 months to live. She ended up living 15 years. MD Anderson helped her through that, and grateful to them for that. And she immediately, when she was given 3 months to live, she was like, I'm an artist. And she was an artist. And but I think more than anything, that people bought a piece of her. And what she built was community. And last night, or not last night, but Thursday night, Hank, when you were at the gallery, I mean, when I looked around and I see 300 people coming, certainly some of them are my friends and part of the community that I built. But it was the community that Fernando Casas built intellectually, with his artwork, certainly, but also his friendships. That's what I think my mom would be proud of, is that we built a business that really is about community. The only thing would have been different is she would have had a piano player there. So that's all I've got about that.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love when you talk about your family. You know, I've heard you tell a lot of stories about your father.
Yeah.
And you two really have to talk about them because they're quite similar in many different ways, but never really heard you talk about your mom. That's really beautiful. Well, when did you ultimately decide to direct the gallery?
You know, it wasn't a decision, really. It was just we had someone leave that I cared a lot about, and I was the next logical person. And really, you know, Ron and Robin, the financial officer and the owner of the gallery, just said, you know, Catherine Anspon later said, you know, you've always been the director. I mean, in the sense that I'm kind of obsessed with art and go to all the art things, and so was sort of a face of the gallery to the Houston community. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was a nice compliment.
You're sort of like George in It's a Wonderful Life, do you think?
Oh, gosh, that's a lot to live up to. But,
that's a lot. Well, I mean, in the sense that he loved his father.
And
he just sort of stepped in.
Yeah.
It was something he ended up doing well.
Yeah.
And he was loyal to his family.
That's right.
You know, he was protecting his brother and all that other sort of stuff. So I don't know.
I haven't seen that movie in so long, but I remember him just being loved by the town.
Yeah.
And
well, both of you should put on a Christmas special. Because I honestly think,
I think that'll work.
Greg, is there any common denominator that comes to mind that connects the influence that Harwood's mother had on him and your grandfather had on you? Kind of a similarity.
Absolutely. I picked up, I mean, it was a beautiful story, beautiful connection. I picked up on Harwood mentioning his love for people and love for relationships and the connection with the people. And so I think his gallery allows him to do that and thrive in that. And then I look at it the same way. And it's evident of me sitting here with you that we connected through my business, and I enjoy that so much, and so I was interesting to hear that from a fellow entrepreneur.
It's not a very profound thought, but it really is all about relationships.
It sure is.
People talk about that, but it is all about relationships. You know, even at a ripe old stupid age of 17, when I worked at the Gap in college, it was commission, and I remember thinking, I got to interview people when they walk in here because I'm paid on commission. I want them to come back. I can't piss them off. And I knew that as a kid.
Yep.
It's all about relationships. They just had to keep coming back. That was my main goal.
Another little small world, you know, whatever, convergence, connection. My friend calls them convergences. But my grandfather on my mom's side also worked for a railroad. He worked for Southern Pacific Railroad for 49 years.
Oh, wow. That's
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of lessons embedded in your story, too. Tell us one that you want us to remember.
Golly, you know, I guess kindness, you know, that's also, I never saw my mom be unkind to anybody. She used to say they're cold, you know, and I know this isn't new. She may have read this in a self-help book or something. They're cold, prickly people, and they're warm, fuzzy people. And she's like, you need to stick with the warm fuzzies.
Yeah, I like you guys better than any self-help book, because I think self-help books are written by people who, frankly, are in desperate need of help themselves. I'm not really sure there's a whole lot to it. You guys made a lot better sense.
All right.
And your story, Greg, what was the main goal that you wanted people to understand from that meandering journey that you talked to us about as far as your father and grandfather and the kind of values they instilled in you?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway or what I would want to leave to listeners is just take pride in yourself and take pride in your work. And that's certainly something that I learned from my grandfather. And it's something that I'll always remember and try to practice that and remember it every day.
Yeah, you know, Emerson spoke of both of you, I think, when he said, what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. This is Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago, and you are listening to Stories of Those Who Inspire with guest storytellers Harwood Taylor and Greg Donnelly on So What's Your Story? Only on Pacifica, KPFT, 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 with our friends in Huntsville. Tatiana, why don't you tell us what lies ahead in the world of Houston storytelling?
Well, you know, I always have something to say, of course.
Yes, you do. But it's always good stuff.
Absolutely. And let me start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because they are the best place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m., located at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. And speaking of learning the art of telling, Dr. Michael Winters and Dr. Hank will be conducting a workshop for beginners on crafting personal stories this Saturday, September 22nd, from 9 a.m. to noon at the Classical Theater Company at 4617 Montrose. So be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for additional information and about other upcoming events, including Skyline Screamers, which is the scariest and spookiest ghost story night in town. And while
Be very afraid.
It's spooktacular.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're signing up for these events, please check out our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 that's listed all under the radio program menu. And not only radio is no excuse for missing our shows, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and our Facebook Live. And while you're still at it, tell us what you think about our show or suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and we absolutely promise to get back to you. Share our page with your friends, and we'd love it if you'd like us when you leave.
You know, I had those noisemakers for Halloween.
Yes,
you remember
I'm
those?
Waiting
yes,
for that.
Halloween is my absolute favorite. I get to do my favorite imitation of you know, Dr. Loomis in Halloween. Michael, have you come home? Michael,
ooh.
You know, yeah, I just do that. Yes. Yeah, I'm not a normal person. I didn't say that.
Oh,
thank you so much. So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And remember, our friends at the Moth and Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you're going to enjoy some fabulous stories and get acquainted with Houston's storytelling community. You can reach any of us, by the way, Mary, Greg, Warren, Tatiana, and me at Dr. Hank at kpf.org. Mary Edgerton is going to be here next week with guests Robert Hallett and Louise Gonzalez, and they're going to be delivering stories about life, or in the words of Forrest Gump, it happens. All right, so that's what's going to be happening next week on So What Is Your Story, right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Harwood, you're going to be one of the tellers at Skyline Screamers, and along with Chris Gorman, will be the hosts on October 3rd. you know who your guests are going to be? Who are going to be your debut people?
I mean, if these people show up, they agree to. Tacy Rozalowski. Tacy Rozalowski does the oral history for MD Anderson, but she's a gifted writer.
Beautiful.
And then there's Amanda Wengner, who's a pediatric ICU nurse and an adult fiction writer. And Michael Galco, who's also at MD Anderson.
Beautiful.
He has a Drosophili, which means fly lab. He's a professor of genetics there and has a hilarious, and now we go to the moth. He has a moth story that is
beautiful.
Very mothish.
Well, if he's into insects, that would certainly, you had to have thought of that. You can't tell me I'm the,
I just set you up. I just
set
you
up. All right. Well, you know, KPFT is corporate free, so I want to be careful here, but Jack Donnelly is a great product. It's so great that when, you know, Greg was out of business for a while, I had to take a leave of absence. I had no pants to wear. It was awful. But Greg, one of your more humorous sales anecdotes is to be sure that when men are asked, what brand of khakis are you wearing, you don't need to make a quarter turn to check, right?
Yes,
no, let me see, you know. So Harwood asked me, hey, what kind of pants? Oh, let me check.
Yeah,
you know, that quarter turn. I love it. So apparently, that is something that is relatively common. I guess it's a gesture you see often.
Yeah, I would. I'd say I used to see it a lot. I'd like to think with the introduction of Jack Donnelly that not so much anymore. So
good.
That's what
All
I'm
right.
going with.
Beautiful. But people really don't have any idea what pants they're wearing.
No, absolutely.
You know,
not.
I think people don't know what pair of underwear they're wearing. Now, Greg Audell, who's sitting right here, he knows that. I believe that there are certain kinds of underwear that makes you feel better every single day. And by golly, I'm here to tell you that it matters. So there's no reason why pants don't matter either. You heard that right. Yes, I have a whole list for you later, Harwood, if you care.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Looking forward
Listen,
to it.
I see that quarter turn as a Larry David moment. We're transitioning into something. It's a label that my friends and I actually use for human moments that couldn't possibly be scripted if you tried, right? Oh my God, that's a Larry David moment. I can't believe it. And Larry David of Curb Your Enthusiasm, your favorite show, and Rob Lowe, I believe, are in your next story.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So yeah, I was thinking about just on this journey, just some of the absurd moments that kind of have presented themselves to me. And the first quick one pertains to Rob Lowe. So I remember in 2010, when before we even launched as a business, I was, you know, working on pre-production and just getting everything ready to rock and roll. We had a static web page that just had our logo and an email. I think it was a Gmail address because we weren't even, you know, had the full URL. And it just said coming soon. And so the first email I ever got was an email from a gentleman that said, I'm Rob Lowe's stylist. He is doing a cover shoot for Men's Fitness Fall Edition, and he thinks he's worn your pants in the past. He really liked them, and we would love some for the shoot. And I immediately thinking, obviously, they're not our pants. I'm just very taken aback by it. And at the time, I just thought to fire back to him and say, you know, no, you know, they weren't ours, and, you know, go on your way. And I remember calling my older brother at the time because, you know, I would defer to him on some things. I would bounce ideas off him. And he said, no, just send them. If you got something, send some. You know, this could be an incredible opportunity. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, maybe you're right. So I fired back to this gentleman. I say, yeah, I'm not sure if they're ours, but I'm happy to send you some pairs. And at the time, I think I only had just a few pairs in each size. You know, it was a pre-production run. And we fired him out. And obviously, they weren't, you know, he didn't go with them. But I just thought how ridiculous it was that opportunity presented itself before we even launched as a company, and something 7 years later we still haven't had the opportunity. And I look back on that and it was funny. The next one is pertaining to Larry David again. As you mentioned, I'm a huge fan of Larry David, specifically Curb Your Enthusiasm. I grew up on Seinfeld. However, so if you watch the show, you notice that Larry wears a lot of khakis, slacks, corduroys, not much denim, if any. I don't think I've seen him in a pair. So in the back of my head, I always thought how cool that would be to get him a pair. And, you know, not from the sense of, oh, he's a celebrity and that's exposure. It was just more like, I really respect his work and this is my work and it'd be cool if he had a pair. Right. Simple as that. So it was a few years back. It was actually a Sunday night and it was the premiere of season 8 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm sitting at home getting ready to watch it and I get a text from one of my best friends in Atlanta. And it's a picture of the top portion of Larry David's head and he's clearly sitting on an airplane and my friend Preston says LD is sitting in front of me on the plane flying back to Atlanta. So I mean, I was not expecting that. And I just immediately fired back. I said, we got to get him a pair of khakis. And I was like, here's our opportunity. And so, you know, of course, the plane, the trail goes silent because the plane's taken off. And I'm waiting and I can't wait. It's a cliffhanger. And so Preston calls me about 3 hours later and he says, I talked to Larry. And I'm like, I say, you're kidding. And he goes, no. And he tells me the story. So basically what happened, if you've ever been to the Atlanta airport, you get funneled
into... Yeah, well, I've been there for a month once.
Yeah, yes. one of the longer escalators you've ever seen to get to baggage claim. And so Preston filed in between Larry, and they were right next to each other, so there was nowhere to escape. And so Preston just said to him, he said, hey, Larry, a good friend of mine has a khaki pant company. He's a big fan of yours. He'd love to get you a pair. And in true, I mean, it was like out of the scene of Curb. And Larry looks at him kind of perplexed and he said, what kind of khakis? Khakis? And Preston is like, yeah, khakis. It's khakis. And then so Larry goes into that mode where he starts thinking, he's like, well, what if they don't fit? He's like, then what do I do? Then I got to send them back, and kind of goes down this rabbit hole that he's famous for.
Right.
And then he says, you know, it's a very nice gesture. He said, it sounds very complicated. He's like, tell your friend thank you, but I'm going to have to pass. And so that was that. And then to close it out, and Preston and I were joking about this recently because I told him I was going to tell that story, is that a lot of this Curb Your Enthusiasm material happens to Larry in real life, and he carries around a notebook and writes down things. And I could just see that coming in a Curb episode of, like, him making a joke. He's like, am I the khaki guy? Is that what people know me about? And so, you know, maybe we'll see it one day.
Yeah,
so.
And then what are you going to do about that? Yeah, you see that.
I'll love it. It will be a very cool story. Moment.
Yeah, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. I do. Although this last season is, I don't know, last
yeah,
season.
It's hard to capture that magic of past.
I don't know, but I mean, he's incredible.
He's a brilliant man.
You ever consider asking Larry David to endorse your pants?
Listen,
the answer is, yeah, I'd love to, but he'll never take it seriously.
Yeah, he doesn't seem one for a sponsorship.
No,
so
no.
I'll settle for him just having a pair. So
there you go. There you go.
There's still hope
right.
for that.
Well, you got me. I mean, that's, you know, I mean.
That's, hey, I'll know, take that.
How much more of a celebrity could you possibly want? You know, right. You know, I love talking about grandparents, and I wanted to talk a little bit about my own grandfather, who was so incredibly inspirational to me. And he was a funny man. He was a man of very, very few words, but every word meant something. And when I was a kid, I respected him tremendously because he was a man of great loyalty and great integrity. And as I had mentioned earlier, he worked in a warehouse for many years. And I worked with him several summers. It was a place called Tempo Products. And he put paint on pallets, wood pallets, and he loaded them on the truck. And I felt badly at times because he also had Parkinson's, and there were some kids who laughed at him, and his name was Jake, and they used to call him Shakin' Jake, and I used to be very upset. And he would always say to me, don't be upset. And I would say, Grandpa, why? They're saying bad things about you. He said, don't be angry. And he taught me that. Mm. And I don't get angry. I don't. And he taught me that. But he took great pride in what he did. And I remember telling him, you know, I can't believe that you're taking such great pride putting paint on a pallet and loading it into a truck. No offense, I love you, but is this really that important? And he said, it is important. But another thing that's important is that you should take pride in yourself. And I didn't know what he meant at first, but he told me, you have a hard time speaking because you stutter. I never said anything in school because by the time I'd get it out, you know, it'd be time for summer break. So I didn't really say a whole lot, and I had a problem through most of my years in high school. My grandmother and my mother thought, well, you know, it'll just go away eventually. But my grandfather knew better. So he encouraged me and he paid for speech therapy. And the kind of therapy that I went through was called a phonetic alphabet training. And what that meant is that every morning, literally every morning for 15 minutes and every night for 15 minutes, I had to look into a mirror, had to look at a mirror, and I had to articulate certain consonants. Pa, 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 ba, ba, ba. I had to watch my lip move inward, outward, and really form those sounds. And I did that. And it really helped significantly, to the extent that when I started college, I felt relatively confident. I majored in communication, and I was interested in a job as a disc jockey at WOSU, Hard Rock Radio Station, and I wanted this program from midnight to 6, but I knew that it would be tough because I still suffered from this reticence, from this nervousness. And I knew that the only way for me to really formulate sounds comfortably would be in front of a mirror. So I decided that I would apply for this job. And in doing so, I practiced in front of a mirror because I knew they would give me a bunch of tongue twisters. It was some faculty member, I remember, who was running the auditions. And I was also a smoker in those days. Everybody was. So I used to smoke, and I used to carry with me a little beanbag ashtray. So I'd sit there smoking cigarettes, looking in a mirror, getting ready for this audition. And I went into the radio station, and I'm waiting in the studio, and I'm smoking cigarettes, and I'm practicing, and I'm smoking cigarettes, and I'm practicing because I'm really nervous. And we go into the station. And he sees me, the faculty member who's there, sees me with a mirror, and I knew for sure he was going to say something, but he didn't. At first I said, I can't bring a mirror in with me, but I did, because I had to. So I brought a mirror in with me, with my little beanbag ashtray. He lights up a cigarette, uses my ashtray. I light up a cigarette, because I'm really nervous. And the consonants that I had the most difficult time articulating were P's, B's, and F's. All right, so the first thing he asks me to say is, Big Bad Bill bought Bull Baba beer. And I said, oh, shit. And I told him, I said, sir, I have a mirror. He says, I see you got the mirror. I hope you don't mind, but I have to articulate in front of the mirror. And he says, hey, it's radio. It's okay, no problem. I said, whew. So I'm looking in the mirror. Big Bad Bill bought Bull Baba beer. Big Bad Bill bought Bull Baba beer. He says, faster. Big Bad Bill bought Bull Baba beer. Faster. Big Bad Bill bought Bull Baba beer. Whew, you know. And then he says, now I want you to say, Fairy Fanny found a feather. Fairy Fanny found a feather. Faster. Fairy Fanny found a feather. F-f-f-f. You know, I'm looking in a mirror, articulating these sounds, making sure that my lips are moving appropriately. I was never more nervous in my life. I was sweating bullets, honest to God. I did the best that I could. And when I was done, it was about a 15-minute audition. He said, pretty good. I think we could use you. I said, mean, you, I've got the job? I mean, even with a mirror and everything? And he said, yeah, the mirror and everything. You know, it's radio, so it's okay, you know, joking around. And people say to me all the time, you know, it must have been your grandfather who inspired you. And I said, it was, but I really did it with smoke and mirrors. That's my old thing, right?
Oh,
that's,
like
yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's absolutely.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Harwood, you know, your avocation is storytelling, but you refer to it as times as your second business. Tell us about the storytelling page that you and Chris have.
Well, we just before I had a Moth Radio story go on the Moth Radio Hour on NPR, and I just thought people would I wanted people to have some place to look up, and so and I also want everyone to know about Chris because I think she's a genius storyteller.
She is.
and I adore her, and so we were best friends and even though Sean Welling is also my best friend, I have two people tied for first place. Anyway, our aim was to post a new video story every month. We've not done that, but we still aspire to do that. We both have full-time jobs and come home, you know, tired. And so, you know, storytelling is an avocation, as you
right,
say.
Right.
But we really are going to start. We've ordered some of our stories, and so they should go up soon.
Beautiful. Your dad inspired your love of storytelling, and he was a freelance writer for several local papers around 1969 through most of the 70s, right?
Yep.
And he and you have a favorite story that I think captures your dad's persona from what you tell about it.
Yep.
It's about an adopted dog, and it happened around 1977.
Well, it was more like 81, I think. But
okay.
Anyway.
All right.
So what happened
tail
is...
tail end of the 20th century.
Exactly, right. Exactly. So my dad is one of those guys who fought in World War II, and like a lot of guys from that generation, he couldn't say, I love you. But you knew he was a sweet guy. I mean, you could see the way he responded with animals, and he would also recite poetry. He would, sing songs. I mean, just to kind of give you an idea, I was living with him at some point, and he was doing dishes, and he's, he says, that reminds me of a poem. And he recites this incredibly long poem by heart, and I said, wow, like when did you memorize that? And he said, fourth grade. And he just had one of those, he was a reporter, and he just had one of those brains that could retain stuff. He also would embarrass us in public, like in a restaurant, he'd say, that reminds me of a song. And then he would sing this really sweet love song from his high school days, and with his pretty good, voice, and with, grand bravado. And it was humiliating as a child. But, as I think back on it, what a sweet guy he was. Anyway, so this is 1981. And my mom was and I were living in this townhouse. My dad lived across the street. Story for another day, because the main reason was so that my mom could say, Bill Taylor, go home. And that kept them married. But he lived across the street in an apartment. We lived upstairs in the duplex, which was also the gallery that I mentioned. Anyway, so I'm driving home. I'm a freshman in high school, and I've got this 71 white Gremlin with a blue stripe down the side, and I pull into the gravel driveway, and I see this long window that's the door that goes into the landing that then goes up to the second store, and I see this big German Shepherd. And I'm like, whoa, cool dog. We don't have a dog. I wonder what the story is. So I go to open the door, and the dog turns to go up the stairs, and immediately, like, all the hair on his back is gone, and it's like a bloody mess. And I'm like, ugh, and so I closing the door, I'm kind of like happy and shocked, and then I turn to look, and now my mom's at the top of the stairs, and this dog has positioned himself right next to my mom. He comes up to her, sitting, and he's leaning into her like he's now the favored son. And she says, well, what do you think? And I said, well, he's beautiful, but what happened to his back? It's all bloody and it's horrible. And she looks at me and she says in a serious voice, we could never have afforded an Air Force trained dog. And I said, I'm sorry, you said Air Force trained dog? Were we looking for one? I mean, what? And so what had happened? She had gone down to the SPCA to pick out a dog for us and surprise us. She saw a young man. She'd gotten there early in uniform walking toward the SPCA with a dog. That did not set well with her. Dogs were supposed to be walking out, not walking in. And she intercepted him and said, under no circumstances are you taking that dog inside there. I'm taking that dog. She took it home, and Gator was ours. And what had happened, he was indeed trained by the Air Force out in California, and he was stationed in Bergstrom Air Force Base, which was south of Houston, and it was summertime. And come to find out, Gator was the name of the dog, was allergic to fleas. So, one flea bite, and he'll just itch himself, to death practically. Well, right about this time, my mom came down with cancer, and she had had it before, and she had beat it, and we thought that she would beat it again, and it was worse this time. And so my mom is losing her hair. My dad is, like, giving this dog baths probably 3 days a week, giving it, different kinds of potions to try and make the hair grow. So she's losing her hair. He's doing everything he can and pouring all the love he can into this dog's. And every, like I said, several times a week, I'd hear this power struggle, because I was in the bedroom right next to this bathroom where he would give Gator the baths. And I'd hear, get in the tub, Gator, okay, don't shake. And I'd hear the draw of the curtain, and then shh, and then, turn around, Gator, and don't shake, and whatever. So anyway, this went on for a while. Well, very quickly, my mom died. And my friend Kevin said that that summer after my mom died, like, you know, no dog had been walked as much as that dog was walked. He might have been the most walked dog in the history of dog ownership the summer after my mom died. And he also kept working on Gator's hair. And I woke up one morning and I was just so moved, and I was laughing too because it was so funny. My dad was singing to my dog. And the song was a big band song in the 20s, and it was made popular, I think, in the 50s or 60s by Nina Simone. It was called Careless. And so I hear the normal power struggle. You know, Gator get in that tub. You know, I could hear Gator's nails on the porcelain and then in the tub and then draws the curtain, shh, you know, and then the shower, shh, you know, and then I hear my dad, hairless, hairless, now that you've got me loving you, you're hairless, hairless in things you say and do.
Didn't you know that you were around listening to this?
I don't know. I was in the next room. Right. He says, you go to parties and think you're smart. If you're not hairful, you'll break my heart. Shh, Gator, turn around. Don't shake. Hairless, now that your bridges all have burned, you're hairless, hairless in things where I'm concerned. Are you as hairless as you seem to be, or do you just hairless for me? And I know now that my dad was singing to his wife who had died. I do know that now. And
that is
so that was my dad. His name was William Henry Taylor. And if you find yourself in line in a movie and you hear somebody singing a sappy 70s love song, it's me. My name is William Harwood Taylor, and I'm his son.
Wow.
That is something else. That is something else.
Yeah.
I am glad that you shared that, both of you guys, because I want this stuff forever. I want this archived.
Yeah, I so appreciate what you do here.
Well, that's such, yeah. No, that is, man, how do you not respond to that kind of stuff? Tatiana, what do you think? It's your turn, dear.
Oh, my goodness.
What? Yeah.
It was such a sweet story.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I had tears coming out.
Yeah.
How wonderful that was.
Man. Well, thank you.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
And and Greg's story with Larry David.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
I love him so much.
Yeah. You can really see him, but you could see him, you know, coming down that escalator. Thing. I mean,
it sounds complicated. Yeah,
that's going to be an episode. That could be an episode one day,
without a doubt. And
sounds complicated.
I could see it there, and it might happen. So
it just spirals out of control, just like everything.
Yeah, stories, man. Stories. It's these little episodes that connect our lives. They are something. Wanted to wish all of our friends in the Jewish community a very peaceful breakfast. This ends the High Holidays. Tonight is ends Yom Kippur. And I also wanted to wish our friend Greg Audell a very happy birthday. I don't want him to think
we
forgot. He's 29 again.
Right.
Actually, the truth is that he's the youngest of all of us. So I don't give a you-know-what about how he feels about how old he is, because he's so young that it's pretty – well, you know, Greg Donnelly next to me, this you know, young as – you people, I don't, you know, I'm getting tired of young people because I'm so old. I'm getting tired of you guys, really. It just sort of eclipses my sense of, I feel like I'm near death sitting with you guys. Okay, in any event, I don't know. So, we have all the contact information about tonight's guests on the So What's Your Story Facebook page, by the way. But I want you gentlemen to reinforce the essential information right now. Greg, tell us where we can buy Jack Donnelly's. Give us the website information, Facebook, phone, whatever you need. Anything except price. Except I can say it's more than 50 and under 150, and it's worth every penny. How's that?
I love it. Well done, Hank.
I can do that.
Yeah, you can find us
like
or scoop a pair at jackdonnelly.com. That's JACKDONNELLY.com. Instagram, Jack Donnelly, and Facebook, Jack Donnelly USA. So check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Or you take a look at Hank on our photo later on and see how great he looks, because, you know, he's essentially a model.
I appreciate that. Yeah. We're going to have to get a pic after this for sure.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Excellent. And Harwood, give us your address on Sunset, web page, phone, any kind of upcoming events?
Well, there are two. I mean, the show that's up right now really is historic, and I hope you can get it before you come see it before you leave back for Austin. But you're in Austin, right?
Yeah, correct.
It's 2501 Sunset Boulevard. and that show will be up through October the 15th. Do not miss it. There are also a selection of drawings that span everything from, I mean, or from the, 1967 through, you know, this year or maybe last year. One that he did when he was 14 years old. Really cool. www.grimeon.com, and it's phonetically, y'all, for Texans, it's Gremillion. G-R-E-M-I-L-L-I-O-N.
Yeah, I have been mispronouncing it. You've been a friend of the scholar and not correcting me, but I am wrong. Gremillion.
That's it. That's it. Right. And you can Facebook friend us.
Right.
The L's are silent.
Right. It's sort of like being in Boston where there's no R.
Right, right.
Yeah, kind of like that. Right.
Anyway, I hope y'all will all come. And
love your stuff, yeah. I know I will if I can. Absolutely. Who was the storyteller in your house growing up, Greg?
I would say my dad.
Sounds it.
Absolutely, my dad. My mom read short stories to me. She loved short stories.
Favorite story.
Salingers and, you know, Diamond is as big as the Ritz Grand comes to mind. I think that was, I'm trying to remember who that was. I don't remember.
Yeah. Any shout-outs?
Michelle Aggressive, I don't remember.
Who do you want to say hello to out there?
I want to say hello to Chris, who always helps me with my stories.
Chris is right around here. Chris is great.
Chris
rocks.
Chris Gorman.
Absolutely. Anybody?
I would say my parents. I think they're, I'll have to send them the link. I don't think they're tuning in live, but
cool.
I appreciate it all.
Cool.
So
very,
it's
very
good
cool.
to be here.
Very, very cool. Well, this has been great. You know, the words found in human narratives delivered by those we love and admire tend to inspire us most. Stories can be drivers for success and can make life move. Thank you to Greg Donnelly of Jack Donnelly and Harwood Taylor of Gremillion and Company for unfolding some special moments frozen in time. Each of you know the power in leaving a legacy by appreciating the legacy that preceded you. Now we're going to close with a little party tune. How's that? Celebrate Greg's birthday. Greg coming in here for Austin. A little bit of John Mellencamp, huh? Again tonight. But don't you dare move, because Wild Bill and the Vinyl Avenger are up next with cool classics for the cooler you. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday for 8 for So What's Your Story and treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubicek, along with Tatiana Gago, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team. We never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Again tonight.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Just make a gift to KPFT This Hour at kpft.org. Then contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses too. Just fill out the employee portion of the form completely and send the form to KPFT, Attention Matching Gifts, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Your help makes a difference. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
KPFT Houston thanks our community partners. Artist Boat, a nonprofit organization providing inspiration and education through unique coastal experiences, including kayak adventures on the waters around Galveston Island and guided walking tours. Visit artistboat.org for more information. And AIDS Foundation Houston, offering free HIV testing every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Visit AIDSHelp.org for more information. This is KPFT Houston.
last call.